Today's episode of Vital Voices is brought to you by Oak Tree Medical Center.
Welcome back to Vital Voices, the podcast where we spotlight the minds and missions shaping health and healing in our communities. Today, we're joined by someone who is not only a skilled physician, but also a powerful advocate for compassionate, human-centered care. Dr. Christine Parker Curling is the author of Beyond the Knowledge, Power Steps on Doctoring with a Human Touch, a compelling guide that challenges the idea that medical excellence is just about clinical knowledge. In this episode, Dr. Parker Curling shares her journey into medicine, the defining experiences that inspired her to write this book, and the creation of her care framework, a practical, heartfelt approach to doctoring that goes beyond charts and checklists. So whether you're a healthcare professional, a patient, or someone who loves a patient, this conversation is for you. So let's dive in. So, welcome to Vital Voices, Dr. Parker Curling.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we have had one or two authors on the podcast recently in the physician space or physician adjacent space, because I find it interesting that we have so many local physicians who have stepped into this space of writing, and it's not always, you know, this specific clinical or like medical education type of space. A lot of it is kind of these interesting offshoots of medicine and more about the ideologies and the practice and things like that. So in doing our research, in preparing, you know, we came across your book, and I found it very interesting, kind of this idea of, you know, doctoring with a human touch, because we know that we've heard so many things in the past few years, especially during the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic. You hear so many complaints, you hear so many things, and you hear also, you know, physicians who are complaining about being overworked or, you know, working in environments that aren't always the most conducive, and all these things that are happening in this space. And so here you are with your book talking about doctoring with a human touch. And I think it's very timely to kind of have that conversation around what you've seen, what your experience are that shaped you into writing this book and having this conversation. But before we get all the way into the book, I always like to find out, you know, what led you into medicine? What you know, share a little bit about yourself and what drove you to pursue a career in medicine in the first place.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this aspect of myself. So yes, I am professionally an internist, an endocrinologist, an obesity medicine specialist. Mm-hmm. But where did this all start? I grew up in a household of five siblings and some cousins at different times, you know, mm-hmm. and church and school and family were really mainstays in our upbringing. We were all strongly encouraged to pursue academics aggressively, and this was probably even more so after graduating from high school. So I would probably have to say that the idea of pursuing a career in medicine was probably first introduced to me by my father. You know, I've always had a creative and artistic side, and I cannot really remember a time in my childhood or youth or adult life, really, where I was not a part of some choir or chorale or praise team. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that particular part of me always existed. But I was also quite drawn to the sciences and healthcare. And I remember funny little stories, you know, as I was contemplating, you know, what are the things that made me go in this direction. I remember things like having the biggest, hugest, most ridiculous first aid kit on our Duke of Edinburgh. Yeah, we had these Duke of Edinburgh expeditions in high school. Mm. And I do have very specific memories of being, I was teased, but I definitely remember my first aid kit being very attractive. It attracted a lot of comments, a lot of attention. And I didn't necessarily see myself as a doctor or being a doctor, but to me, that first aid kit was imperative if we were going to be sleeping in the bush and doing all the things you do as high school students doing, you know, expeditions. So I would say that at times I always felt torn, you know, am I the artist? Am I the scientist? But my undergraduate studies probably kept pushing me toward medicine. And, you know, I guess in retrospect, I kept knocking on doors mm-hmm. and those particular doors kept opening.
Yeah.
So that's probably how it happened. Okay. I applied and I kept going.
Like you said, the door, you kept knocking and the doors kept opening. So what was the journey like through medical school and into early practice? And what would you say are some pivotal moments that shaped the physician that you are today?
Okay, that's a great question. The journey through medical school and early practice was interesting. I have to admit that I enjoy it much more intensely in retrospect than I did at the time. So, you know, the memories are fond, but the experience was intense. Mm-hmm. So I had a good experience, but I think so much of it was characterized by grit and grind, you know, the brute force required to survive and to excel, that I don't know that I consciously allowed myself enough time to enjoy the great experience I actually had. So I suppose if I knew then what I know now, I might have tried to be a little bit more present in those moments, especially the non-clinical parts of your medical training, you know, the interactions and the getting involved. But I would say, you know, early practice. So medical school was interesting. It was enjoyable more in retrospect. I was allowed to explore many different aspects of myself. Mm-hmm. And as a resident, I think I had a lot of access to clinical scenarios, mm-hmm. even different parts of hospitals that I didn't even realize were really such a gift. Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing, you know, we've had conversations with a number of different physicians since we've launched this, and even going back to my time doing the Doctors Hospital podcast. And I find that there's always so much more to that med school and clinical years and that whole process that I think people who sit on the outside of it would even understand or be able to appreciate sometimes. Even just like the concept of overnight calls and all of these different things, like it's quite the undertaking, I think is the way to put it. And I imagine it might be difficult in the moment. And I think I think a lot of people who have journeys through difficult challenges or just challenges to get somewhere in life, a lot of times in the moment you look at it like, boy, this sucks to some degree. But then when you get later on and you look back, you know, it wasn't so bad. Like, you know, the experience was impactful or meaningful or even enjoyable, where you might not have been able to say that in the moment. And I find that maybe that's just sometimes how it is when you face challenges. It's just like in the moment, it could feel like this is a lot that's happening right now. But then you look back and you appreciate the journey. And I imagine that's how it is for a lot of people, no matter what field you're in.
Yes, probably. So yeah. I agree with your sentiments.
So your book, just step back, because I imagine, you know, getting to the point of writing a book where you're starting to talk about going beyond the knowledge, because obviously I imagine a lot of the experience in med school is as much about the knowledge and the clinical and the book knowledge, so to speak, but also the ability to interact with humans who are going through suffering and pain. So, you know, you come across your book, Beyond the Knowledge, and it emphasizes that second part, which is the importance of the human touch in practicing medicine. So what would you say was your biggest inspiration to write the book in the first place?
Wow. My biggest inspiration for writing the book in the first place. I would have to say that the biggest inspiration for writing the book in the first place was probably my patients. Okay. So there was, you know, maybe in over the last 2 to 3 years, I was going through some personal growth experiences, you know? Mm-hmm. And I found myself in a place where I felt that it was urgent for me to find the boldness, at least the boldness to kind of tell my story in part. Mm-hmm. And up to that point, I would have written about 3 children's books, but I hadn't written a book that I thought had a message that might have been impactful to somebody that could maybe help somebody at some point in their journey, maybe the way that I was helped in ways by other people. Mm-hmm. So So that's a complicated question. I'm sure we'll explore a little bit more as we discuss. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you look at it, would you say that there was a particular like patient interaction or a personal experience within your practice that made you realize that, you know, this book needed to be written? Because like you said, you've written, you know, some children's books, things like that. But, you know, was there like that one specific patient experience or that one specific personal experience that made you think, you know, this is something that needs to be written and I need to be the one to write it?
Okay. So, yes. So let's go back to the personal growth and the urgency mm-hmm. and the feeling that I have so much in me to give. And I wanted to be in a position where I had poured out most, if not all, of the things that were placed in me to mm-hmm. give. So at that point, or maybe at this point, I didn't know how to write a book. I didn't know, you know, where do you start? How do I publish a book? Is anyone going to read my book? So you have mm-hmm. all these questions that paralyze you from taking the first step, right? So mm-hmm. you're like, I'm going to publish a book, but wait, I don't know how to publish a book. I don't know what to do. Maybe I shouldn't publish this book. Maybe nobody will read my book. So what made me do this? After I decided to write the book, I had to ask myself some very pivotal questions. Those questions were, what am I good at? What mm-hmm. what can I do that could be helpful to somebody else? What am I so talented or gifted at that I would find it easy to do and easy to teach others? Mm-hmm. And so I asked myself those questions, and I thought back to my interactions with my patients very, very consistently. My patients would say things like, you know, doc, it's easy to talk to you. Or they mm-hmm. would say, doc, I feel so comfortable telling you what's going on with me. Mm-hmm. Or I would find patients that would start telling you things that usually would take maybe 2 or 3 visits for someone to feel comfortable enough telling you.
Right.
And so when patients started saying, doc, you know, whatever you do, please don't change. Or I think one of the most memorable moments was one of my patients referred to one of our visits. Well, he referred to our visits, you know, during the course of my training. I'd come across this person who referred to the visit as a get together. You know, I miss these get togethers. We haven't had a get together in a while. So I said, well, clearly there's something about my ability to communicate and connect with patients beyond the ability to, you know, take a history, mm-hmm. do a physical exam, order the appropriate test that makes them want to come and send their family and send their friends and right. and keep engaging me as their physician. There must be something there. Mm-hmm. And so I decided I'm good at communicating with my patients. Is there something here that's different? And is there something here that's teachable? And is there something here that is maybe backed by evidence? Mm-hmm. And are there elements that other people have written about that perhaps were not maybe put in some nice, concise place
right.
as a reference guide? So mm-hmm. the patients gave me the indication that this was the space where I should function to help others come along with me.
Right. You know, I know from conversations I've had with other physicians, the importance of building rapport with patients is always talked about being very critical, right? Because like you said, you in those interactions, if it would take 3 to 4 visits to get a particular type of information or piece of information out of a patient, and that's something that may be critical to their care plan or, you know, even just the diagnostic process, then the ability to get that information faster in your interactions and in your process becomes life-saving potentially for some people, because now you're getting information a lot more quickly. And that need for having a good rapport, for patients feeling comfortable to speak to you, I imagine is very important. Like I said, based on previous conversations and I'm getting even based on your experience as well. So,
yes,
you know,
yeah.
your the title of your book obviously makes a suggestion that knowledge alone isn't enough. You know, the practice of medicine is a highly academic, you know, field. right? So even just being able to get to the point where you can, you know, be a physician who's out and practicing, whether in the public or the private sector, you know, it's highly academic. But the book title suggests that academics knowledge isn't enough. So from your experiences, from what you've seen, whether personal or with your patients, you know, what do you think is missing in maybe the modern medical practice, you know, that your book seeks to address?
Okay. So what is missing from modern medical practice that this book seeks to address? Well, you know, as you said, the practice of medicine is very academic, and what is required from physicians and from caregivers in general, from all aspects and all members of the healthcare team, what's required of them is a lot of sacrifice and dedication, right? Mm-hmm. And so in private sectors, in public sectors, in employed positions, a lot of the time what's emphasized is efficiency. You know, you have this much time to see this patient, you have this many patients to see. And so efficiency is really what is the gold standard. Get the patient, do what needs to be done, get the patient out. So I think what institutions can do is try to have maybe during onboarding processes and during continuous medical or continuing medical education offerings, have sessions where physicians and other healthcare providers can be reminded of the need to also exercise compassion in the delivery of their healthcare. So it's not a matter of only getting the patient in, getting the diagnosis done, getting the patient out, but also remembering that you're treating a patient. But I think what also is important is to remember that the members of the healthcare team, the people that the healthcare system is so reliant upon, mm-hmm. to deliver this healthcare, need care themselves. So we have to have outlets where physicians and healthcare providers at every level are made to feel that they are important, are made right. to feel that their needs are important too. And the system must realize that if the physicians, the nurses, the physical therapists, all of those involved in the healthcare team are exhausted, tired, unable to kind of regroup, then the care that they deliver is going to be compromised. So we need compassion to be taught, mm-hmm. but we need compassion to be delivered mm-hmm. to the members of the team also.
Right. That is that is an interesting and critical component that I think sometimes is missed, because, you know, there's been a lot of public discourse, both recently and looking back, you know, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, right before the pandemic, where a lot of the public discourse, even towards physicians, was, you know, you're entitled and, you know, you're asking for too much, or you're seeking for too much. And then that brings about a lot of different conversations from a lot of different spaces, whether it's from the union side, from the government side, from society. And I imagine, you know, there's a need for compassion, particularly in that workspace environment, to allow people to be their best. Because I don't think it matters what sphere of industry you work in. There's a certain degree and level of compassion that should be shown that is helpful in getting people to get their best out. I think sometimes when we look at the highly professional and highly academic fields like law, like medicine, like accounting, there's this idea, and we see it on TV. So you see it on shows like Grey's Anatomy and other shows, when you look at like you know, suits from the lawyer side of it, all these different things. You look at it and there's this idea that it's supposed to be this knockdown, drag out. You have to right. pull people kicking and screaming to get the best out of them. But I don't imagine that's always the case. I think for a lot of people, there's a need for compassion and care to be shown to them, because then they learn that, they see it modeled to them, and then that puts them in a better position to model it as they interact with their patients. And I think that's kind of what I'm getting from your explanation of, you know, kind of what puts you in the mindset to write, not just write the book, but also, you know, what you feel is missing in this space. So one of the key elements of your book is the CARE framework, so C-A-R-E. Can you break that down for us? I don't want to spoil it, so I'm going to let you kind of do the full explanation. But can you break down what each of those letters stands for? And then we can kind of go into, you know, like your development of the framework and all of that as well.
Okay, yes, it would be a pleasure to explore this with you now. So the CARE framework consists of the elements that we should try to remember to implement into our daily interactions with patients, with colleagues, and with ourselves. And so, you know, the idea is that as we race through our days, we should try not to forget to care. And in the mad rush to try to get all of the work done, we are reminded of the elements of interactions that elevate our experience and preserve our professional longevity. So the CARE framework refers to compassion, awareness, responsiveness, and engagement. And it really seeks to organize, to help you to organize the themes that are explored in the book. So I can give you a little bit more, like you said, we don't spoil the whole thing, but I'll give you a little bit more. So in the chapters on compassion, we are just reminded to be compassionate in our approaches to our patients, our colleagues, and ourselves. In the chapters under awareness, we speak to the need to be aware of ourselves, what we bring to those interactions, and what we bring to the encounters, and what nonverbal cues might be given to us that might change the way we, or change the course of what we're doing and saying. Under responsiveness, this one is deep. This one can be interpreted in many ways, and it is really explored on many levels, but really it kind of encourages us to reflect on our encounters and to keenly observe others and to be able to adapt. If we're going down a road that we see is maybe not getting through to the patient, you know, maybe we're speaking in a way that the patient is shutting down, or maybe they don't understand. If you're responsive to what's going on in that particular scenario, you can quickly kind of redirect how that is going. And then finally, engagement, you know, along with responsiveness, engagement just reminds us to be present, actively participating in the encounters. And this is what helps us to better relate to patients. Yeah. So yes, compassion, awareness, responsiveness, engagement. That's the CARE framework.
Yeah. You know, I imagine that things like this require a degree of intentionality, because medicine is a space where, you know, you have things like breaking bad news that you have to take part in as a physician. You work in a field where a lot of times time is short. But you know, what's at stake is very, very high when you're talking about people's lives are hanging in the balance. And then you also have physicians who may be working through, like I said, you talk about things like 24-hour calls, especially for physicians who are still in the process of going through like their DM programs and things like that. It becomes a lot to, in the midst of everything, all of the demands, to say, okay, I have to remind myself to be compassionate to my patients, my colleagues, and myself. I have to be aware. I have to be responsive. I have to engage, because that's a lot to navigate within the framework of what the field is. So it's good to see someone kind of put forth this information and kind of encourage physicians. And I imagine this might be something like, you know, obviously this is for physicians in particular, but I imagine these are principles that can be applied across industry in terms of how people interact with their colleagues, with their clients, things like that as well. I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP?
Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
So, you know, I find that physicians love acronyms. You know, when I was going through and I saw, I was like, boy, y'all really love the acronyms. but I also know that you guys love process and you love systems and you like frameworks. So how did you go about developing this framework and how is it now shaping your own approach to patient care?
Okay. Yeah. So you are correct. We love acronyms and I didn't do research to tell you, where did this start? Where did this come from? But I have to say that, you know, almost a decade and a half, maybe 2 decades, I'm not sure how long ago I started medical school, but even this many years later, mm-hmm. I still use some of the acronyms that I came across when I first started my journey mm-hmm. through the academic part of medicine. So I you know, for the students, I like to tell them, to advise them to use them as just little hooks mm-hmm. to kind of organize things that you might need to remember. Right. So what the book, so specifically, let me bring it back home, sorry. So specifically the CARE framework, the acronym, after I completed the initial draft of the manuscript, really, the CARE framework was developed, like I said, to assist in making the contents, the wealth of information mm-hmm. in the book, a little bit easier to digest. So I think after going through and realizing how many chapters there were and how much information there was, I needed to make it simple. Mm-hmm. Because in medicine, we have a lot to do. We have a lot to read. How can I break this down and make it simple for a doc to maybe pick it up, flip to the back of the book, you know, get a quick summary of what's going on and remind themselves of the elements of the CARE framework while going through their day. And so, you know, I chose I required a team to help me, really. So after we narrowed down to the CARE framework, this was chosen because it was short, it was catchy, and was really super relevant to the space that we're functioning in. And I think it can be adapted, like you said, to really any sphere of communication that you find yourself navigating. It's not specific to doctor-patient relationships. It's really applicable to any interpersonal relationship mm-hmm. that you find yourself in. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I say, you know, sometimes you work on something and it's from the vantage point of, you know, your personal experience in the industry that you're in, but you find that it might be applicable across, like I said, across industries, across stages of life, things like that as well. So I would encourage our listeners, even if you're not a physician, you know, there's a lot of good that you can pull from this book, even in approaching your everyday life, you know, in business, even in your family, things like that, because these are principles that are applicable, I think, even beyond just the concept of working as a physician, even though it's coming from that vantage point and the examples are from that vantage point. So I'm going to add a little bit to this next question because I recently started reading Atomic Habits by, I think it's James Clear. And, great book. You know, it talks about this idea of doing things with just like, so atomic meaning just really small. So just small changes, small intentional changes to drive, you know, major changes in life. And so, you know, when you start to talk about specific steps, and I know your book kind of approaches it from that standpoint as well, as like, you know, you're not necessarily trying to, I like the thing people say, you know, how do you eat an elephant? It's like one bite at a time. So it's kind of taking that same idea, like small intentional steps. So what are some, you know, well, I guess from your vantage point, because now that you're incorporating this into your practice and you're interacting with other physicians, you know, how important is it that they take this view of small intentional steps as opposed to, oh, this is so hard to do because there's so much that you're asking me to change?
Okay, yes. This is a very good question. And I like it because, like you said, there's a lot of information here. And I think what needs to be done when you approach something like this, you want to say to yourself, which of this, you know, what part of this work is relevant for me? When I read this book, when I interact with the scenarios that are presented in this piece of work, mm-hmm. what resonates with me? Mm-hmm. Which one of these things do I find myself perhaps struggling with, or perhaps a little bit uncomfortable navigating? That might be the one thing that you start to work on.
Right.
And as you see yourself improving in that particular arena, it perhaps might build your confidence to start introspecting and mm-hmm. saying, well, what else could I do a little better? Mm-hmm. What else could I do a little better? So pick one. Mm-hmm. Work on the one thing that you think you could improve at and give yourself the positive reinforcement of seeing yourself grow. I think that's excellent.
Awesome. So, you know, I ask this question delicately because I don't want you to I don't want you to make any of your colleagues feel a type of way. But from your experience, are there specific steps within the care framework that you find physicians have the most challenge with trying to implement?
Okay, this question might not be as delicate as you think.
Okay.
So I appreciate the need to be respectful of colleagues, because mm-hmm. of course we're all on the same team. Mm-hmm. The number one aim really is to help the patient. And I would have to say that my number 1.1 aim is to help the physician.
Right.
So in and this is not the answer to the question yet. This is preamble that was spurred by your introduction to the question. And I just want to stick a plug in here saying that the book was written for the betterment of the patient, but in as much as it was done for that reason, it was also done for the betterment of the physician. Okay. Mm. So to your specific question, one of the power steps that this book spends a lot of time on is listening. Listening to yourself, listening to your patients, and listening to others. And many physicians, including myself, struggle with listening to patients. And in fact, Alexis, studies show that patients have only a few seconds of uninterrupted free speech mm-hmm. before the first interruption occurs by the healthcare provider.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So some studies quote maybe between 10 and 12 seconds. You got about 10 to 12 seconds before we interrupt you. So listening is probably the thing that we struggle most with. Mm-hmm. And there are many reasons for this. And the most prominent reason might be the time constraints mm-hmm. that we find ourselves in mm-hmm. when we're involved in clinical practice. So that's the one. That's probably going to be the one.
Yeah. I remember during my time at doctors, you know, there were conversations about, I guess, implementing, when you talk about implementing standards and what the standards are, right? And one of the standards that I heard people mention is this idea of 15 minutes per patient for physician interaction. And it's like, you go back to your earlier point about the, you know, the importance of developing rapport and being able to kind of tease out of patients, whether it's part of their history, whether it's a part of their actual presenting complaint, all of these different things, it can be time consuming, which again, I think to your point, it speaks to why that interruption may happen quickly, because especially if you're a physician who's been practicing for a long time, there's certain things where you hear this, this, and this, and you kind of already know the path that you're on, because it's like, I've seen this 100 times. I know what this is, right? But at the same time, it is kind of that concept of you have X amount of time to see the patient because there are how many ever other patients in the queue. And I think that applies both in the public and the private sector. So I do imagine that plays a very critical role in this whole interactive process. You know, I like to think of, you know, going through the process of writing a book and a book like this, a part of it is to be able to influence, you know, both current and future physicians. So, you know, what do you hope to, or how do you hope that your book will influence both your colleagues now and future physicians who may be in medical school or maybe in a DM program, as they are coming across this and reading and kind of looking at what you've put out there?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. I would say that the process of writing this book allowed me to find myself in a position where I thought to myself, well, gee, I wish I had read this 15 years ago. You know, as I was working through the journey, there were literally some chapters that I wish I had read. Mm-hmm. And I found myself sometimes in the process of proofreading, having to go back and read again because the aha moments were so profound. And so I hope that what this work does is that maybe it reaches back to somebody who is somewhere along their journey, and it kind of pulls them forward a little bit, makes their journey a little bit easier, because perhaps I would have given them some insight mm-hmm. to be able to navigate a space, because I was able to bring to them the wisdom that I have now. I was able to bring that wisdom to them so much sooner in their course of development. So right. I hope that Beyond the Knowledge influences current physicians really by reminding them to care for themselves as mm-hmm. they care for others. You know, in the course of training, we are taught to, you know, suck it up, mm-hmm. deal with it, get the job done, mm-hmm. check those boxes, get the work done. And so we are conditioned, I would imagine many of us are conditioned to really suppress what's going on, perhaps with us, to get the work done. So I hope that physicians, as they navigate this space, know that it's okay to care for themselves as they care for others. I hope that senior physicians remember to always be mindful of how they're shaping the generation of physicians that follow behind them. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when we reach the peak of the mountain, we sometimes forget what it took for us to get there. And I don't want us to lose that personal touch. I don't want us to lose that compassion for helping someone else along the way, because we have to remember that we cannot be where we stand forever. Right. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's impossible for you to be where you are forever. So remember to show compassion to the people who want to be so much like who they perceive you to be. Mm-hmm. One day they may be taking care of you. You know, so remember that. And like I said, for the younger physicians, I really hope that those still in training find that it's kind of a roadmap to help mm-hmm. them through some of the interesting scenarios that they perhaps had no clue that they would find themselves in.
Yeah. You know, it's almost like parents. You know, you have parents, and sometimes they act like they forget what it was to be a kid or a teenager when they have conversations with their kids and their teenagers. It's almost like the same thing. Sometimes you get so deep into your career, you almost forget what it was like to be a medical student or a DM candidate. And you almost forget what those preclinical and clinical years were like to some degree. So it's kind of that reminder to say, hey, you know, you've been there, you've been through it, you know what that looks like. Don't forget what that process was. And perhaps, like you said, you know, be able to pass along your knowledge, your information, your compassion, things like that to the next generation. You know, I imagine that physicians won't be the only people to read this book, because we are very much interested in, like, healthcare is such a major component of our lives, especially in a post-pandemic world. So I imagine, you know, there are going to be patients and families who, you know, read the book as well. What message would you want them to take away from what you've written?
Yes, let's talk about that. I want patients and their families to remember that doctors are people first. Mm-hmm. Before the doctor was a doctor, the doctor was and is a person. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, the career in medicine and as a caregiver is a career of passion, mm-hmm, and sacrifice. And I think patients and their families will gain valuable insight into the doctors that care for them. And I think patients remember that being intimidated sometimes and withholding information that might make a difference to their healthcare is probably not warranted. Because, mm-hmm, I think sometimes we see the white coat walk into the room. And I'm not saying that this doesn't happen to me either. Sometimes we see the white coat walk into the room and we absolutely forget what it is that we might have wanted to say. Mm-hmm. Because we think that this doctor is this person up here, and, you know, we can be intimidated. So I want patients to remember that when they're navigating their healthcare system and their healthcare space, to interact with their physician as they would interact with a regular person. And I think, you know, this can speak to, as much as the physician must show compassion for their patient, patients should gain some insight now. Like you said, mm-hmm, you had alluded to this earlier, that patients should show some compassion toward their physician and try to relate to them with a human touch,
right,
rather than seeing their physician as somebody specifically designed just to meet their needs, mm-hmm, and fulfill their desires, you know?
Yeah. You know, you talk about the nature of that physician and patient relationship. And I imagine sometimes patients may find it difficult to advocate for themselves, or even patient families may find it difficult to advocate for their loved ones for a more compassionate or, like, human-centered approach. So how would you, I guess, advise or encourage patients, patient families to be able to advocate for themselves in that physician and patient interaction?
Okay. I feel that patients can advocate for a more human-centered approach in their own healthcare experiences, really, mm-hmm, by seeing healthcare less as a transactional interaction, mm-hmm, and more as a relationship-building exercise, mm-hmm, or experience. And so I think when you look at it this way, you shift the focus of the patient from, what is this doctor going to do for me today?
Right.
And you shift it more toward, well, how is this doctor going to assist me, mm-hmm, today to help me to achieve my healthcare goal?
Right.
See, so one approach sees the physician as one who fills demands, mm-hmm, and the other sees the healthcare team, including the physician, as one who partners with them,
right,
to help them to achieve a particular outcome.
Mm-hmm. You know, Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, yeah. So I was just reiterating. So I think the way that you see yourself in that interaction can change the focus and can enhance your ability, mm-hmm, to have a more humanized experience in your clinical interaction with your doctor.
Right.
But I'm going to answer another question here that you didn't ask.
Okay, go ahead.
It's kind of related, because, mm-hmm, you asked about how do patients and patient families interact with the doctor. Mm-hmm. I think this book is going to be valuable for family members of the physician, family members, mm-hmm, of the medical student, you know, spouses, girlfriends, cousins, friends. When you have somebody who's journeying through this possibly 20-year experience of academia, mm-hmm, reading something like this might give you insight into what is going on in the world of this person that you are friending. Mm-hmm. And it might help you to be able to relate to that person in a supremely more effective manner. And it might preserve some relationships because it gives you some understanding of some what insight. Is really going on. Yeah, what's really going on in their world. So thank you for not asking that question.
So, you know, it's funny. It's funny that that's a question that I didn't ask, considering that my wife is a physician. And we were together through the entirety of her preclinical, like Trinidad, here, the whole nine. And it is an interesting journey to walk as the person who is not in the space but is intimately connected with someone who is going through that journey, because it has its shares of ups and downs, it has its shares of challenges. You know, you come home from a tough day, or you had a patient that didn't make it, and all of these things. There's so many elements to it. It's, you know, depending on which specialty and the degree to which it pulls them away from the family. Like, there's all of these things that come into play. So I think that is good to mention that. So for people who may be, you know, involved, whether it's family, loved ones, whatever it is, with someone who's going through that journey, it's good to know that the book will be helpful for them in that way as well, because, you know, perhaps I could have used it at some point during the journey as well for me, kind of navigating that with, you know, going from fiance to spouse through the journey of medicine and studies in that space.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oaktree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oaktree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oaktree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oaktree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP? Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oaktree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oaktree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oaktree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oaktree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oaktree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
You know, we talked a little bit about this earlier, the time constraints and even sometimes the administrative burdens of, you know, practicing medicine. You know, a lot of physicians, I imagine, will feel pressured by that. How can they still practice then with a human touch, even in lieu of or in tandem with the time constraints and the administrative burdens that exist in the space?
Yes, this one, this question, this is a toughie because this is so personal to me. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of those power steps that I struggle with most. I struggle with balancing the interaction with the patients that maybe want to tell me everything that's going on with the need to have the efficiency in the visit and with the need to round it off by completing the documentation. Mm-hmm. So this one is tough for me, and I suppose what's happening is I'm answering this question, it's an evolution. And so even in a time constrained scenario, I have to find a time to smile and to maybe implement small gestures, like maybe an appropriately placed or timed touch on the shoulder, something to at least remind the patient that they are connected to you. So what I try to do to address the burden of documentation is I try to complete my notes while I'm in the visit. And, you know, so it has cost me to develop my typing skills. But in the midst of typing, you know, I have to take a pause, look at the patient and just say, hey, no, don't worry about this. I'm just double checking your labs. And so in the midst of being efficient, find tiny little ways to punctuate that interaction with some human touch. So for me, that's a little bit of eye contact. For me, sometimes it's an apology that I'm not making the eye contact because I'm, you know, reviewing a lab from the previous visit. And then another big one for me is learning how to redirect my patients when they are veering off course. These are the skills you have to develop to tactfully redirect the patient without being rude and without making them feel that they don't have the time to express something that might have been important if they had had the chance to tell you.
Right.
So, yes. One more thing probably is delegating, allowing myself to trust others when available to do certain parts of the administrative work.
Boy, that last one. Because I imagine, again, sometimes you want to hold things so tightly, but for your own benefit and for the benefit of the patient, and sometimes even for the benefit for those who are working with you, it's better to release some things along the way. You know, given that medicine is a space that's been around for a long time and people get kind of used to doing things the same way, you know, have you encountered resistance to, you know, taking this approach, or even encouraging others to take this approach within medical settings? And, you know, if you have, you know, how do you address that?
So resistance is an interesting way to frame it. And I suppose in some way it is resistance to this approach. But what I would say is in some employed physician models, the time that I might have to interact with a patient is not dictated by me. It's not dictated by you. If you have 15 minutes to do the follow-up visit, that's what you have. And so to navigate this, you kind of probably have to adapt a more problem-focused visit. And the way that I would handle it is that maybe if there's another non-urgent complaint that the patient brings up, you might have to schedule a follow-up visit to explore that. So when you find yourself in very rigid systems, you have to be problem focused. Why did this patient come here? Are they doing well on what the decision was that we made last time? And you say, hey, is there anything going on that you think is important that's bothering you? If you had, you know, if you had to say that something was concerning you today outside of what we just covered, what would it be? And that would give the patient a little bit of time to prioritize what it is they want to tell you rather than telling you everything. And it allows you to make the decision about, is this something that needs to be actioned right now? Or is this something that can be tabled to another visit? Or perhaps is this something that could be referred to somebody who could more appropriately and maybe more quickly manage it?
Right. Because there's that part too, right? Like sometimes you have things where, and I think this is where the multidisciplinary approach to medicine is so helpful, because sometimes you come across something that may not be specifically in your wheelhouse, but you know it's a necessity that it's addressed. And so sometimes it's about knowing when to hand that patient off on a particular matter to a colleague who has the specialty in that particular area.
Absolutely.
What role do you feel like medical institutions and training programs play in fostering more compassionate care?
So I think medical institutions and medical schools and you know, medical training programs can maybe implement training sessions, maybe workshops during onboarding, like we would have said before, of new physicians, and periodically, maybe thereafter, have sessions to remind the healthcare team members to keep compassion in medicine. And, you know, Many larger institutions have metrics by which physicians are evaluated. Mm-hmm. Sometimes physicians have, you know, they're evaluated by patients. There's questionnaires that are done and completed, so they know how important physician quote unquote likability is. Mm-hmm. So investing in some CMEs or some other personal development seminars would probably be beneficial. And I'll stick a plug that Beyond the Knowledge provides very specific recommendations and summarizes some of the literature out there that addresses many of the elements of implementing compassionate care.
Nice. That's a good plug right there. You know, I look at physicians, but anybody who writes books, and sometimes it feels like there's this, you know, people say when someone gets one tattoo, there's just more and more and more that comes. Like, it's just like, it's almost like it's a gateway drug and you just can't stop getting them. I find sometimes with people who start writing books, they write one and then they realize there's so much more that I want to talk about. There's so much more that I want to say. So in looking ahead, as we look at our final thoughts and takeaways, you know, what's next for you? Is there another book that you're working on? Are there any other projects or initiatives that you're working on? I saw your name is on the poster for the fertility empowerment event that's happening next week on, I think, Thursday and Friday. But anything else that you have going on that you want to let our listeners know about?
Well, yes, I think. Yeah, so I will be one of the panelists helping to spread information during the Fertility Empowerment Conference. I think that would be very impactful for a lot of people in our community. Mm-hmm. I suppose I must publish the children's books because they were there first.
Oh, wait, they're not published?
They were written.
That's true, but because when I went looking on Amazon and I searched up your name, I only found this book. So I did find it, I did find it interesting when you said children's books earlier. Like, I didn't come across that in my search.
Right. So I must publish those. But this, like I said, this passion project that I thought was imperative to giving back to people on the journey that I walked, this one felt urgent. And so this one was I put everything into this. I put all I had at this particular time into this project. So we'll get those ones out. And then, of course, you know, I will be considering developing some content for the workshops that I keep suggesting might be effective for helping institutions develop communication skills and self-care strategies to keep the longevity or to enhance the longevity and well-roundedness of their key players. And then, of course, because life is full of surprises, I have to leave some room for destiny to completely surprise me about what comes next.
There's always that. You always have to leave room for God to move. all right. So I kind of mentioned it a little bit already. I know the book is available on Amazon, but where else can our listeners find your book? Or if they wanted to connect with you for further conversation, how can they get in contact with you?
Right. Yeah. So the ebook, the paperback, the hardcover, they're all available on Amazon. We'll be working very hard to get some of the hard copies in some of the local bookstores, and we'll be doing some pop-ups. We'll probably be at medical conferences around town. So there will be opportunities to buy the book live.
Awesome.
And then, of course, the email address for Beyond the Knowledge is knowledge@power-steps.com. So knowledge@power-steps.com. The website and the rest of the social media are currently under construction, but the website will be power-steps.com.
Awesome.
So power-steps.com and knowledge@power-steps.com.
All right.
So stay tuned.
Sounds good. So my last question then, you know, if you could leave our listeners, whether they be physicians, patients, patient families, with one key takeaway from Beyond the Knowledge, what would it be?
Listen to your patients. Listen to your body. Listen to yourself. I would have to say that the foundation of every theme discussed in this book will be the essential skill of listening.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Christine Parker-Curling, for joining us today on Vital Voices. This is a very engaging conversation. And I think the book has the potential to be very impactful for the entire community, whether it be physicians, students, patients, and their families. So thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a great pleasure.
Awesome. What a powerful conversation with Dr. Christine Parker Curley, a true reminder that medicine is just as much about heart as it is about science. If you're a physician, maybe this is the nudge to slow down and see the person behind the patient. And if you're a patient or a caregiver, may it empower you to seek care that values your story just as much as your symptoms. You can find Beyond the Knowledge Power Steps on Doctoring with a Human Touch on Amazon and connect with Dr. Parker Curling on the platforms that she's mentioned, and we'll also link them in our show notes. Thank you for listening to Vital Voices, where we believe that healing happens in the connection. Until next time, stay well and stay human.
Did you miss a part of today's show? You can catch this episode and all Vital Voices episodes online at youtube.com/@VitalVoices242. See you next week as we sit down with another Vital Voice.
We'd like to give a special thank you to today's sponsor, Oak Tree Medical Center.